Welcome back. Welcome back. You bring me some coffee? No, I don't. What's that? Oh, not. I'll be acting right the rest of the day. All right, let's get started. Okay, we've taken a break. It looks like it was an enjoyable break, and we will. We got about 35, 40 more minutes thereabouts. We'll wrap it up. Do we have any updates? Q&A. Then we'll just have some Q&A and anything you'd like to ask, we'll do that, and we'll wrap up the morning. All right, someone give me a takeaway from this morning. Somebody should have got one thing. All right, there's a hand.
You must be coachable.
You must be coachable.
The very first thing you said before you actually started, you said the preparation season is the key to success.
The preparation season is the key to success. You know, I could really stay right there. I could really preach a message right now about that. I really could, because that is so. You look back over your life and you see all the times that God was preparing you, giving you opportunities. At the time, you didn't see it, but then you look back and you say, wow, Lord, you were preparing me all the time. You put someone in my life who selected me to do this or to take on this responsibility, and that helped me later on. And you look back, and that's why I like to tell young people, when you're in the stock room, stack the boxes like you got some sense. Don't be throwing at people's boxes all over the place. God is watching you, and you've got to be faithful right there in the stock room. Where nobody else is, you've got to be faithful. David was faithful in the field with the sheep, writing his psalms. No one knew his name, and he was faithful. So let me go back to coaching, but he was faithful. He was faithful. He was faithful. And so no matter where you are right now, nobody may not know your name, but you be faithful. Come in there with the right attitude. Do what you're supposed to do with a spirit of excellence. God keeps good books. He's watching. And the day will come that you will look back and you will see all those seasons of preparation. God does nothing by happenstance. He does nothing by accident. He has a plan. And at every stop of the way, you should be picking up something. And when you arrive, you'll arrive with the skill set, the techniques, the leadership ability, the talent, the right attitude to impact what God has called you to do. You will arrive and you will be ready. But if you ignore the lessons, I want you to hear this. You see ministers of God, you see great people of God, they get there, but they can't maintain it. All right, that was another hand. Okay. Wow, that is very good. Can only go as high as the standards you set. Amen. And let me add to that, the standards we also model, because we've got to live it. Amen. It's got to apply to us too. It's got to apply to us too. Yes, sir.
Never let good work go unnoticed, but never let poor work go unnoticed.
That's good. Absolutely. Yes, ma'am. Sure is. And bad standards are contagious. People will say, not here, but in other organizations, they'll say, you know what? The rules say you have to dress a certain way, but Jamal, they don't say nothing to Jamal, so I'll do it. I mean, because if they say something to me, then I'm going to say, you didn't say nothing to Jamal. So you picking on me Because I'm tall, short, fat, skinny, whatever the case might be. I'm young, I'm old. You picking on me because I live over here. See, you didn't say nothing to Jamal all this time. And that's something we have to stress in our organization because we're huge. And people will say in a minute, you're picking on me because I'm black, you're picking on me because I'm white, you're picking on me because I'm old, you're picking on me because I'm skinny, you're picking on me because I'm left-handed, you're picking on me because they come up with all kinds of stuff. And it's like, I didn't know you was left-handed. I didn't know it. I mean, I didn't know that. I didn't know, you know. And so we have to be very consistent. And that way, when the allegations and accusations fly, if you've just held the standard, then it will stand forever. It will stand. And so, good point. Yes, ma'am. Best ideas come from the people doing the work. They're dealing with it every day. Yes, sir.
The only people who don't make mistakes are the people who don't do it.
That's very, very good. And we don't have any of those in here. Everybody here is fully engaged. But out there, you know, the people who are perfect are the ones who aren't. Rick Pitino, famous basketball coach. Coached in NBA, coached college now, coaches at Louisville, very successful, won a national championship. He said, failure is good. It's like fertilizer. He says, it's like fertilizer. It's like fertilizer. Because as you continue to work at it, that failure from the past is fueling you and encouraging you and is feeding you to do better next time. He said, failure is good, it's like fertilizer. Like fertilizer. Helps you to grow. Yes, ma'am.
Collecting data is not enough. You have to use data between the knowledge and understanding.
You just memorized that whole chart we threw up there. You memorized the whole thing. And as you work at it, you will begin to see it. You really will. You will begin to see it. And when you think about our church, worldwide ministry, impacting nations, going cyber, doing all the things that we're doing, it's going to be important that we synthesize it. Because there's going to be data points all over the place. All over the place. And so, excellent. We'll take one more and then we'll get moving. Yes, ma'am.
Defensiveness is the opposite of coachability.
Oh, that is good. Defensiveness is the opposite of coachability. If someone comes to me and says, you know, I got a recommendation, and I immediately get defensive, I'm not coachable. Because I need to take that information in. Let me go back in my memory since you mentioned that. Is anyone familiar with, and I may not pronounce it right, Jahari's window. Mm-hmm. And it's four grids or four window panes, and it talks about there's one that is what I know about me and what other people know. There's one what I know about me and don't nobody else know. But there's also one is what you know about me and I don't know it. It's what you see, what you've observed, what you know about me, and I don't know it. I haven't come to that self-realization yet. So if you come to me with a recommendation or come to me with a constructive criticism or suggestion, and I immediately get defensive, then I will always be closed off in that window. Because I'll only know about me what I know. And there are some things you know about me that I don't know. That's what's so great about having a good, God-fearing spouse. Yes. Praying woman who can say, come over here. You ain't all that. Let me tell you about you. You ain't. Let me tell you about, it's like that. Come over here. You played all that stuff out there. Let me tell you. Let me tell you one thing. This is not the army. This is not the police department. I'm the queen here. Nah, she's wonderful. But she don't mind letting me know. And I'm wise enough to say, yes, ma'am. And so, so we'll get started now. Next slide. Here we go. The art of creating wins. We have three listed. We have applause, we have appreciation, and we have access. And I want to link these back to a slide we saw earlier. Remember we talked about the three types of people on the team? The front and center, in the wings, and behind the scenes. I want to match them up. So applause would be which group? Front and center. That's the one that if they do something great, they have no problem. And they really would like you to mention it to everybody. There's nothing wrong with that. You know what? I stayed up late doing it. Let everybody know how great I did. And some people are wired like that, and it's not a problem. That's just the way they're wired. But we've got to know on our team. We've got to know. Because we got to appreciate people the way they desire to be appreciated. Second, appreciation. Who would that be? In the wings. You know, applause is normally public. You bring them up front. Sometimes you may say they have a few words to say, and they're happy to do that. Some people get real nervous. They're like, they pull out that thing. I like to thank my mother. She really worked hard to raise me. Like, how'd you get a note in your pocket? I mean, when I first came here 17 years ago, I really wasn't sure what was gonna. And they're ready. You have to give them a time limit. You know, 3 minutes. 3 minutes. You know, this employee of the quarter, you got 3 minutes to make your speech. And so, because they're ready. You know, then they pop up the video. They got their life, in video up there. And, picture of them when they were a newborn baby, mama rocking them. And got to be careful with them. You got to make sure you put them on time limit.
You got to make sure you do it, too, so they don't do it themselves.
That's right.
You got to make sure, because they will do it themselves.
Absolutely. Yes. And they're great parts of our team. I mean, a great team is one that has all kinds of members and it keeps it interesting. Appreciation in the wings. Sometimes the value of, I appreciate the way you turned in that report today. Because I knew that was tough putting all that in. Minister Rope over here talking about that data stuff last week, and you really went farther than the data and you got it in on time. I appreciate that. Takes 25 seconds, and the next time she needs to do a report, she's going to knock it out because someone noticed. Now, I had an interesting access. I had a real-world example just the other day. I have a person who's over personnel, and I have a person who's over operations, one who's over logistics, and one who's over intelligence and all that. And so my personnel person is very experienced. And when we talk, she's got it to the understanding level. So when we talk, we don't have to talk long about business. So then we're laughing and joking or something and all that. Well, my operations guy, he's new. So we're shaping and molding and all that. So when we talk, it's about problems. And the other day he said, whenever I see you talking to Major such and such, y'all be laughing and joking. Every time I'm talking to you, just all these problems. And I said, good point. But he was really desiring access. He wants to talk to the general on a personal level. And we couldn't get there at that point. I mean, we talking about this major exercise, and finally toward the end we could get there, but initially it was all, whenever he came up, it was just, what about this mission? What about that? And then he'd see me with the personnel person. We're just laughing and joking. And he finally said, I don't get to talk to you like that. When I talk to you, then later on he told me, he said, one day I thought you was going to fire me. I left your tent and I fired myself. Because I said, I know I'm gone today. I know I'm gone. I'd already fired myself. So that way, when you said I was fired, I wasn't going to be surprised. I was going to say, sir, I fired myself. I said, no, it's not. You're not fired. I know you're new, and we're working through it. And so that access piece, what was what he wanted. And there are people around you who want access to you. They want access. They see something in you. There's something that you have that can help them. There's something you have that they desire. And as leaders, we've got to take that moment to give access. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so are you saying that it's not a process? Like, when it comes to access, if they desire it, you just give it, or does time help you get there?
Well, you know, that's a good question. Very good question. And I'm going to say, the answer is always, it depends. It depends, because sometimes you can have a new employee and you've got to do some mentoring, coaching, and shaping, and they may need some access to you where they have freedom to come to you and say, you explained this yesterday, but I'm still not sure about how to do this. And if they don't have that access, sometimes people bluff their way through it. I know none of you have never bluffed your way through it. You just weren't sure, but you were kind of cautious about going to the person because they're going to think you're, you know, they're going to think you're what? What I just heard? Incompetent? They're going to think you're incompetent? You know, it's been explained once or twice. And so sometimes it's that way. Other times, access is almost like a reward. They've proven their faithfulness. They've proven their dedication. And now, if you're mentoring, you want to help them get to the next level. Mentoring is future focused, so now you're giving them access to help them get to the next level. And so it really depends on the situation. It does not mean that anybody who wants your time can get it. It doesn't mean that. It doesn't mean that every time somebody wants to talk about the football game, they can come in your office and talk about it. So you've got to manage that, control that, and you can't give access to everybody. We understand that. But in your team, that group of people that you should be influencing, there are some that's going to require more access than others. The example I gave earlier about the Civil War general, there is some that you can just simply say, this is what I need done, and they're gone with it. And they would do it much better than you imagine or envision. But then there's others you may have to spend more time with. You may have to have checkpoints along the way. Remember earlier we talked about what does success look like? What does right look like? If you're going to Tuscaloosa, there's mile markers along the way. You get there, there's a welcome to Tuscaloosa sign. Well, depending on who you've assigned the project to, you may have to have mile markers along the way, where I need you to update me every Friday on this project. On this project, I need you to update me every Friday. 15 minutes, I need you to update me. So now we have more of an opportunity to direct, because what we don't want is to get to Tuscaloosa and what they give is not what we wanted. So you done drove to Tuscaloosa and you in the wrong city, because that's not what I needed. So if we can put those, depending on the employee and the importance of the project, there's three factors. There's three primary factors that are important when we're talking about this type of stuff. And it applies to quite a bit. The first one is time. How much time do we have to get this done? If I have a lot of time, I can spend more time developing you. If it's a short crunch project and we can't negotiate, because Michael Kay said we need this by Tuesday, so now time becomes an issue. Second, it's the complexity of the issue, the complexity of the problem, the complexity of the project has a lot to do with how we're going to interact with our team members, our working group, our committee, the complexity of the problem. And then thirdly, the leader's experience. The leader's experience. Because if the leader is very experienced in this, he or she now has the ability to direct it in a much more clear and concise fashion. Even if the team comes up a little short because the leader is experienced in it, he or she can overcome it, he or she can work with it, he or she can support it. But if the leader is not that experienced in this, then he or she is going to need the staff to make sure they do a complete product, if that makes sense. So time, complexity of the problem, and the leader's experience. And with leader's experience, I'm also talking about the leadership team. You may not be doing it just for one person. All right. See, y'all get me to just talking, I just be. All right, next slide. Yes, ma'am. Okay, let's go back to it.
Sometimes, I'll take that example. How do you get people to be okay with who they are and that it's okay to want applause? Because sometimes that's frowned upon by people, and so and they've experienced that, and so they want applause, but they won't say it because they're not comfortable with it. Appreciation, people might not want to be out front. They don't want you to call their name out, but that leader, for whatever reason, will do it, but and the employee doesn't feel comfortable saying, please don't do that. That embarrasses me. How can you just get people to be more honest about what they need without feeling embarrassed about it?
Yeah. that number one, it starts with clear communication. And you know, there's nothing wrong with asking. Absolutely nothing wrong with asking. New person comes in, or you're rebalancing the staff, you're rebalancing your team, or you're trying to initiate a new level of performance and all that. There's nothing wrong with saying, you know, I know we're all going to do a great job on this, and I want to make sure we acknowledge you in the way that's great for you. What's your thoughts on that? And people normally will say, you know what, I just have a problem getting in front of people. Then you know we got to write that down and remember that, and also it comes from observation. There are several ways that you as the leader is going to receive, for the sake of this discussion, I say information. One is observation. One is reporting. You ask the person and they report and they tell you what it is, and then the other is going to be trusted agents. So you got somebody. These people on your team, and Sharon is a good friend of Vyesha, and you go to Sharon and say, you know, I think Vyesha's done a great job on this project, and I want to acknowledge her in the right way. How do you think she would want to be acknowledged? And because she's a trusted agent and knows Vyesha well, then she tells you know what? She always talk about how scared she get when she get in front of the crowds. And document that, and you get that information. Because it's important. You don't want people to be nervous because you want to award them. And I found when I leave for today, I've got to go to a retirement ceremony. And I found that out even when I'm giving the retirement stuff out, that everybody don't want to say nothing. Everybody don't want to say nothing. They don't work 25 years chasing bad guys, and they scared to get to. So I just call them up. I say some great stuff about them, present it to them, and we pose for the picture. And I shake their hand, and they go back over there and sit down. Because everybody, I found that out. Everybody don't. Yeah, you like to say a few words, and you can see them, that they are just nervous. And so now I don't even ask people to say anything. It's their program. If they want to say something, they'll have that opportunity, but I make sure I don't put them on the spot, because some people would much rather run into a burning building than stand in front of this group and say something, especially short notice too, which makes it even adds to the pressure. They didn't have time to prepare, and now you're going to put them on the spot. So we have to be careful with that, but we can observe. So, yes, ma'am.
They really know it.
Okay.
They're just not honest about it because it's been frowned. it like, and I use the first one because that's the one applause that people are really maybe a little bit more shy about. I mean, they want it. They really do want it. And they know they want it. You know they want it, but they just won't be honest about it. And I'm saying that's how can you get them to be more comfortable with what just who they are? And that is okay. If you like applause, it's nothing wrong with that. It doesn't mean that you're arrogant. If you don't want to be up in front, it's nothing wrong with that.
That's right.
You're just like, but how do you get people to feel more comfortable with being who they are?
Well, I saw Willie's hand go up.
I was just going to ask, based on what she was saying, wouldn't that be a culture thing?
Well, we were going to talk about, just mention, culture and environment. Culture and environment. Now, this person, you know, you said two things in your question. You said they know they want it. You know they want it. Really, if that's the case, then you can give it. Even if they don't.
Okay.
If you know without a shadow of a doubt, this person beams when you get them in front and say, y'all give Joe a round of applause. It's in a good way now, though. It's in a good way. Y'all give Joe a round of applause. And you're right. Sometimes people will act like they don't want it, but they really appreciate it. And so I think you as the leader, as you make your observations and you feel like you know this person, and then you can do it, then afterwards you can say, if you chose to, you know, I didn't want to put you on the spot. Was that okay, me calling you up front and doing it like that? Because next time, if it happens again, I don't have to do it like that. And they would probably say, you know, that was all right. It was all right. You see them smiling. I mean, and so you can work through that. But environment and culture has a lot to do with it. If it's an environment where people feel comfortable, they should always feel comfortable being truthful, but being comfortable with recognition, where you do it so often that it's a part of the culture. If you're only doing it once a year, where it's really friction, it's such a big to-do that it could make them not want to be a part of it. But if you're doing it regularly and consistently, where now it's not that big of a deal because we always reward our people and acknowledge them when they're doing great stuff, that would pull the person quite often who's a behind-the-scenes person, because they see this is a part of what we do. It's not something that we only do once a year. It's just a part of what we do every month or every quarter. And if we're doing that, then that can generate the momentum, and it will pull people into it. So, any other comments? Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, I was going to say that, Melinda, I think part of it's helping them understand what the root is. They've been rejected for it in the past. So if they understand that root has to do with being criticized and judged by people for it, then it can be okay that it doesn't matter what people's opinions are, and we want to celebrate you. So that might be part of it.
So you're going to look at, who was I talking to? Me and Ms. Alonzo was talking on break, that people bring into the workforce all their experiences, issues, challenges, personality stuff, rejection, all the self-esteem, they bring all that with them to work. And when they get up in the morning, the guys shave, the ladies get their hair together and all that, and we grab our bags, our luggage, and we come to work. And everything from life is in that luggage, and we bring it in, and we sit it by the desk, and we're ready to work. And you come in there and say the wrong thing, they open the bag, and here's what I've been going through for the last 10 years, and you said the wrong thing, and it's like, what in the world did that come from? When you're not just dealing with the day, you're dealing with everything that's in the baggage, everything that's in the luggage. And so then they clock out, grab their bags, go back out to the car, and so come back the next day with all the luggage. And so so as leaders, we have to work through that. I saw someone's hand. Yes, ma'am.
To Melinda's question that the culture thing is probably going to be the best way to change that, and that is someone, I think Michael K. or somebody, while back, we had gossip success. You know, you gossip negative stuff all the time, but you don't, the good things don't spread like the rumor mill. So it was like, hey, let's gossip success. If somebody's doing something good or done something good, let's make it a practice, send it out to all employees. So-and-so got her master's degree in the organization. So it becomes a cultural thing, so.
That is very good. And I've never heard it put like that, gossip success. Good. I think we're going to, next slide. Good segue, Minister Dale. Give real-time constructive feedback. And so, encouraging performance, what our people are doing every day, what our vision partners are doing, encouraging performance. But to hit on what Minister Dale just said, encouraging life efforts. So they've gone back to school. Let's encourage that. Let's talk about that. They're trying to pick up a trade. They're trying to learn how to do the spoken word, whatever it is. Let's encourage life efforts because we want whole employees. We want whole vision partners. We want whole leaders. And so we could not just stop at performance, because you can perform and not be whole. See it every day. Then we want to encourage work habit efforts. We put that one because we want to encourage, catch this, what people are trying to do. Maybe they're not at the performance level yet where they're performing well. You know the stages of group development, forming, storming, performing, norming, and adjoining. Well, maybe they're not there yet, but they're trying, and you see improvement. We want to encourage that. We want to encourage that. As I was talking earlier, I think I said what on this example we just had, that what we were doing on the first day, we got better each day. We'll never be perfect, but if we can just improve, then we're getting a good job done. And then, as Pastor would say, encourage thinking efforts. Encourage our critical thinking. Encourage our strategic thinking. Learn how to think better. It's unfortunate, but most people think on a superficial level. We think first blush. We think rooftop. Just, we don't go deeper. We don't go into it. We don't look at cause and effect. We don't think about second and third order effects. We, as a rule of thumb, we've been taught to just superficial thinking. Next slide. Let's talk about the reasons for, as a coach, as you coach your teams, let's talk about real quickly three primary reasons for poor performance. Three primary reasons for poor performance. Next. A lack of communication. A lack of communication. Catch the bullet point under that. People don't know what is expected of them. People don't know what is expected of them. Corey, if you would roll the jogger video. Communication. We have to communicate where people will know what is expected of them. We'll be right back. People don't know what's expected of them. No communication of expectations. So people do what they think is best. Get back in the truck, drive off. They're happy. They're happy. They accomplished the mission. They did what they thought was the right thing to do. Yeah, he's eating this candy bar, driving down the road. He just wanted to help. Just wanted to help. So we have to communicate so people know what's expected. So right off, quite often, there's a lack of clear, individualized communication and direction. Some people require individualized communication. There is also a lack of feedback. Feedback is all a part of when we mentioned earlier, never let great work go unnoticed, never let poor work go unnoticed. That's all part of feedback. And I see this quite often in large organizations. There are mixed messages from different leaders. I was talking to our staff about this just yesterday on our shifts where we have several leaders. You know, we said earlier that you are what you repeatedly do, and people are watching you, and they figure you out. So our people know which leader is the tough leader on reports. See, if I get this report to Sergeant such and such, he's going to go through it with a fine-tooth comb. But if I give it to Joe over here, Jamal will just go look at it real quick and approve it. And so our people kind of figure out which leaders are going to enforce the standard, which leaders are going to let it slide. And once again, not here, but as you think about your work experiences, you can look back and you can think of situations where if you wanted to get certain things done or get approved on certain things, you knew which leader to go to. And if that leader was off that day, you wouldn't ask about it then. Y'all just wait till they come back. They're on vacation. They'll be in here Friday. Okay, I'll wait till Friday and ask about this, getting this purchase approved. Because they never look at the budget. They don't know if the money or not, but they'll approve this purchase. Yeah, they'll approve it. Now, if I give it to Tim over here, Tim gonna pull out the budget. He's gonna be talking about exactly when. Okay, no. I better not take the mic, okay? Cause he's gonna be looking at that budget and doing stuff. And I just. When is he going on vacation? So mixed messages from different leaders. Next slide. A lack of conditions, and this is really on the leadership. So not just a lack of communication, but a lack of conditions. In other words, people need more help to succeed. People need more help to succeed. What do we mean? So they need more time. When we talked about time earlier, time, complexity of the problem, leader's experience, people need more time to succeed. Or they need more tools. I remember when we had with audio, they needed more equipment. They needed better equipment. People need more training. And so in this case, we have to make sure we have set our people up to succeed. We have to make sure we've set our vision partners up to succeed. So we give them a task, but if we don't set the conditions, no matter how well-intentioned they are, they can't succeed. Next. And finally, a lack of consequences. We were talking about rewarding people earlier. They see that nothing happens one way or the other. When people see that nothing happens one way or the other, I mean, people who do a good job, people who don't do a good job, it's all the same. So there's a lack of conditions, and so they see no encouragement on previous good work. And we have people in the organization, we have vision partners in the organization that we should be encouraging and complimenting and acknowledging for doing good work. They see no reward for good work, and they see no repercussions for poor work. Remember what we said earlier. Every time we allow it to slip, we've set a new lower standard. We've set a new lower standard. So what are your thoughts here? When we talk about a lack of communication, a lack of conditions, or a lack of consequences, can you look back over your career, even in previous organizations, and see a time where, you know what? I really wasn't set up for success in that job or in that position or whatever the case might be. You know, as I look back, I never had the training to do that. Or as I look back, what they were asking me to do, I couldn't do that. I tried my best. And so I know I can look back and see where I just wasn't ready. When I talked about 50 Cent last session, I didn't have the training to lead. I was 19. I didn't have the training to lead 30 grown men. And I was commissioned as a second lieutenant in 1983 and went to my basic leadership course in 1987. Normally, you go real quick. I don't know what was going on. For 4 years, I'm trying to function as a platoon leader without the experience, without the training. I wasn't a prior service person. I went straight from Phillips High School to UAB, 2 years of ROTC, and now I'm an officer in the United States Army. And I'm an accident waiting to happen. And I accidented all over the place. Yes, I did. But I knew one thing, to listen to my senior sergeant. He mentored me. And he'd say, sir, funny how in the Army, officers are sirs and ma'ams, but they don't have all the experience. He'd say, sir, this is what I need you to do. If you just handle that paperwork, I'll make sure all this is done. In other words, he was saying, if you just get out the way, if you just go in the office, get your ink pen, just start signing stuff, and just get out the way, I'll make sure this is done. Then 50 Cent came on the scene. I could work with 50 Cent, and I began to learn a little bit. Then I get some training and go to another class, and got a lot better. But for that four-year period, I was not set up to succeed. And it was just the grace of God that he blessed us, and he saw us faithful. Now I was where I was supposed to be, doing the best I could. So he blessed us to overcome all of that. And so we've got to make sure that we set people up to succeed. Next slide. This is, so we've got to ask ourselves, have I clearly communicated what I expect? Think about your areas. Think about your teams. Think about your units. Think about your divisions. Think about your section. Think about your vision partners. And ask yourself personally, have I clearly communicated what I expect of them? And not just of them, but of each of them, because different people have different responsibilities. Does everybody who report to you or through you know what's expected? Let's take it home. Do our kids know what's expected of them? Clearly know, because sometimes it's trial and error. That's how my grandmama did it sometimes. Go do it, then it's wrong, go do it again. Come back, go do it again. And it's like, if you just told me in the beginning, this is exactly how you want it, that's how I'm gonna try to do it. And so we've gotta make sure that we clearly communicate. And then, are there conditions that hinder them? Are there conditions in the environment? Are there conditions regarding tools and training and time that's hindering them? And if so, we as leaders have to work to mitigate that. And then thirdly, are there consequences for their performance, good or bad? Most of the time it's going to be good because people want to do a good job. I really believe, I'm an optimist, I really believe that most people don't get up in the morning, start getting ready to come to work, And they're saying, ooh, I can't wait to get that today. I'm going to drive my boss crazy today. He better be eating this breakfast today because it's on. When I get that today, I'm going to drive him nutty. Just wait. Ooh, I can't wait to get there. I hope there's no traffic jams because the time I walk in the door, it's on. Most people aren't like that. Now, there's a few, but most people aren't like that. Most people aren't getting up in the morning scheming and conniving and saying, you know what, I just can't wait. I'm going to blow that office up today. I'm blowing it up today. Just wait. It's going to be all over the place. Wait till I get there today. Most people aren't doing that. Most people want to do a good job. Even Joe wants to do a good job. And Jamal, that's right, absolutely. All right, next slide. Let's go to the next slide and let's see what's up there. Yes, I want to talk about this right here. I added this. It's not in your packet. Once upon a time, I was an inspector general. And my job was to go all over the nation identifying why units weren't performing. A systems approach. Why aren't they doing what they need to do? Why, when we look at the information derived from the data, why don't we see the performance we're supposed to see? And so it's a one pager. It's very simple. You can tell by now I'm a simple person. I don't do nothing deep. But I want you to look at this. Noncompliance. Why isn't this unit, why isn't this division, why isn't this whatever it is performing? We go across the front row, top row here. Either is it they don't know what's expected, what the performance standards are, or is it they can't comply with what we're asking them to do? Talking about conditions then. They can't comply. We just haven't set them up for success. Or is it they won't comply? Now we're talking about consequences. Come on, my sister. And so now we can drill down one level more. We're not going to stop here. We're going to branch off into three on each side. Very simple. So if they don't know, is it because they never knew? Which speaks to how we onboard people, how we orient people, how we bring in new employees, how we orient them into our new sections and into our units. They just never knew. Wasn't their fault. They don't know because we never taught them. We never trained them. We never taught them how to catch a bull. We didn't. Wasn't in the book. Still not in the book. Bull get loose today, we're going to do the same thing we did the other time. So is it they never knew, or is it they did know but they forgot? And if they forgot, that speaks to retraining. That speaks to a continual training process. That speaks to coaching and mentoring. Maybe we did bring them in and we taught them, but now they're forgotten. It's been so long ago they're forgotten. And then thirdly, is it the task was implied? What do I mean by that? If the reason they're not performing is, remember earlier I mentioned time, leaders' experience, and the complexity of the project. Is it they're not performing because the project we've given them is so complex they don't understand the underlying things they need to do to accomplish it? See, if I say go develop a strategic plan, but you don't know all the steps that go in there, then you can't perform it. You can't accomplish it. So is it they're not complying because they don't know, or is it they're not doing what we need because they can't comply? They want to, but we haven't set the conditions for success. So they're scarce resources. We're saying build brick without straw. We haven't given them enough resources. We're telling our engineers to go and do all the fancy stuff, but we haven't given them the equipment. They want to do it. Or maybe they don't know how. They want to, but they can't because they don't know how. Or it's simply impossible. Why would you say it could be impossible? Based on the level of the assignment, based on the level of the leader, based on the resources or lack thereof, based on the amount of time we've given them, it's just impossible. I've cried at work one time in my career where tears came out my eyes because I'm very conscientious. And if you tell me to do something, I'm going to do everything I can to get it done. And I was working for another agency. I was in charge of training for the whole department, which includes firearms training and everything else. And the boss comes in and says, I need you to look at, to do a, like an inventory out of all the guns that everybody's carrying and tell me certain points about each gun. And I need that by 5 o'clock. Nothing is computerized. It's stacks of paper. And some people got 3 and 4 sheets to them. And it's hundreds of sheets of paper that I've got to analyze in a couple of hours. And I started crying. I went to my office and started crying. Tears were coming out of my eyes because there was no way I could get this done. It was impossible. It was impossible. No room to negotiate. Needed by 5 o'clock today. I can't get it done. Mission failure. Tears was coming out of my eyes, sitting at my desk. Tears. I am hot because you've set me up to fail. Well, in retrospect, because we said earlier, if you're not making mistakes, it's because you're not doing anything. Probably I should have said, sir, it's impossible. I should have said, you know what, this is, I should have took him out of those papers and said, look at here. How you expect me to, I can guess, but it's not what you really need. I just went there and cried. Tears came out my eyes. And I've seen some stuff, but that was the only time tears came out of my eyes. Grown man, tears came out of my eyes because I was frustrated. It was impossible. And I should have went back and said, I just can't. But it's not often. How often do we tell someone it's impossible? You ever told your boss it's impossible? Sharon, you said, yeah. Yeah, I told him. You better pray this through, Pastor. This is impossible. But with God, all things are possible. And so it was impossible. So I could not comply. No matter how much I wanted to, I couldn't comply. I could comply later, but not that day. Then thirdly, won't comply. So now it's not an issue of we don't know. We do know. We've got the conditions. But here's a case of we simply won't comply. Why would that be? No reward. If I do it right, nobody's going to say anything. No penalty. There's no consequences. So they say they want these time cards turned in by X time or whatever the case is, but nobody ever do anything about it. So I ain't got to worry with it. Or they disagree. Sometimes in other organizations, we can require things and we can mandate things and people just disagree and they just say, you know what, I'm not doing it. I ain't doing that. You all can do it, but I'm the guy they don't give any work to anyway because I mess it up, so I just walk around messing with people and I ain't doing it. I ain't doing it. You do what you want to do, but I ain't doing it because I still get paid on Friday. And so they disagree. So when you really look at it, this won't comply all deals with consequences, good or bad. reward, recognition, awards, whether that should be counseling, written warnings, and all that. But sometimes we get over in this case, not here though, but in other organizations where people won't comply. So non-compliance, and this is called the root cause analysis model. It's just the root cause analysis, where we look at a unit or division or a group or a team, and we're trying to figure out why we can't get what we need. Why we can't get what we need? Is it an issue of the improper conditions? Is an issue of training, is an issue of they know how to do it, but they just can't get there. And so it makes it very simple and easy to drill down. And once you drill down in it and you figure out it's scarce resources or the task was implied. So if it's implied, that means I, as the leader that's overseeing it, I've got to give very specific guidance and make sure the expectations, and I communicate extremely well so the team knows everything that goes into what my expectations are. If we need a marketing plan, if I have an experienced leader that understands that, then I can just say we need a marketing plan for XYZ and they run with it. If I have a new person who doesn't understand it and they're not sure what a marketing plan is, then I've got to give very specific guidance on the components that I want in it. Okay? All right. Next, and we're going to end right here because we are at 11:30. Let's skip that one. Let's go up three slides, I think. That one right there. Challenging performance in five easy steps. First of all, this is what I saw. So I observed, Sharonita, I saw you come in late today. You know, you were like 45 minutes late today. Anything you want to share about that? Now I get her response. Well, traffic was jammed up, or I left home late, or, you know, got to arguing, whatever the case might be. Wait for a response from your team member. Now remind her, well, this is what I need to see. You know, I need you to be here by 8 o'clock each day because that's very important for us because we have that first meeting to set the priorities for the day. Bang. What can we do to make sure this happens? What can we do? Not what can she do, what can we do? Because we're a team. What can we do to make sure this happens? And then she says, well, what I can start doing is I'm going to set my clock so I can be here by 7:45. And that way, if there's a little traffic, I'm still here by 8. All right, so this is what we agree to do. You said you'll set your clock by 7 and get here by 7:45. And if you're going to be running late, I need you to call me. Then if you call me, then I may be able to adjust the meeting time because I need you there. Takes 10 minutes. This is what I saw. Wait for a response from your team member. Remind them, this is what I need to see. So now I'm clarifying the expectations. This is what I need to see. How can we make sure this happens? What can we do to make sure it happens? Now we summarize it. Okay, this is what we're going to do going forward. Takes less than 10 minutes. Then I will say, we set it at 8 o'clock because that follow-on meeting where I got to brief the boss is at 10, and so I need this one at 8 so we can collect all the information, and there's no way for us to move it. Plus, everyone else gets here on time, and I just got to work with you, and you work with me. Because if not, there are going to be some consequences. There are going to be some consequences, right? See, you got to minister day up on your team, too, sometimes. You know, you got to have a minister day up on your team. All right, let's minimize that. Go to the last slide. There's a sum it up slide. Yeah. So never let poor work go unnoticed. Make it private and positive. Check it out before you challenge. Did you communicate? Were the conditions right? Were there consequences? Use the 2-minute challenge for performance that needs to improve, for work habits that need to change. We did not talk about sidetracking, but you have that slide, those slides to discuss that. Minister Melinda, we got a few minutes. Let me do some Q&A. Yes. If there are any questions, not just about this, maybe a question about something else that I could entertain today before we wrap up. Enjoyed hanging out with you all. Can't believe you let me come back, but you did. So are there any questions? Going once, okay.
You showed us a decision-making process. You showed us earlier in the presentation the decision-making triangle. The bottom of it had data. I think the top had understanding. And you said that one of your commanders or leaders was initially bringing you data, but eventually you were trying to coach him to a higher level. Can you explain a little bit how you did that coaching to move the people who were giving you data up?
Yes, I sure can. I'm going to talk Army for just a moment. I use this part of the example. My logistics, my supply person is standing up briefing, and this is what he's telling me. We have 10,000 gallons worth of fuel. We have 3,000 meals here on the base camp. We have such and such and such and such, okay? So now I'm asking questions about how does those, let's take the meals. How do the number of meals we have project out? We got 3,000 a day, but I got more units coming in 2 days. Are we going to have enough to feed them when they arrive? What's the ordering process? How long does it take to get here when you order? I found out it takes 12 days for fuel to get there. So if we order in 12, if we wait until we get low and it takes 12 days to get here, we're going to run out. And we actually ran out on one mission. And so based on the questions, they were shaping questions. So the next day, you've got to tell me not just the 3,000 meals, but based on the number of soldiers we have here today, we can feed X amount. We have X amount on order, but there's 2,000 soldiers showing up Friday, and this is where the meals will stand in. So toward the end, it wasn't just data on what we have today, but how does that tie into our mission? So now I'm getting, this is what we have today, this is what's been ordered, this is what's going to go to the new people that are arriving. These three missions, they're green, amber, or red is a code we use. If it's green, they're good to go. This mission is green on meals. This one is amber. Okay, if that one's amber. And so literally all of that was concised on the one page slide. One page. So toward the end, he popped that up there. I actually look at it and go, next slide. Where before, ooh, I hated to be him. Because he was standing there, he was taking questions left and right because it was just data. We needed to, if you can put that triangle back up, cognitive hierarchy. So I know where you're going, MK. When you look at data across the church, number of attendees, number of visitors, number of midweek service, number that's hitting the internet, numbers that's watching live stream, numbers that doing that, how are we going to wrap our arms around that where it all makes sense, where we start getting trend lines and decision points in there? What's going to trigger the next action? So I got this, but what does it trigger for me? I see it. It's good data. But what are we doing with it? How do we synthesize it? How do we take it into information and then take it to knowledge where when we present it to pastor and executive team, they get understanding. And what we're trying to attain is a common operating picture where, in this case, for this example, the executive team all are looking at this picture that we're painting, and pastoral care gets their understanding, the worship team gets their understanding, finance team gets their understanding, and when we don't do that, we end up with segments of data over here, segments of data over here, segments of data over there, and everybody's looking at this data, and there's no common operating picture. Yeah, and so we really, we could sit down and talk about that for several hours and different ways of how to do it. I love, you know, Pastor, when he talks Mark 4, he talks about that light not being put under a bushel. What you learn, make sure you share it. The Army spent $1.5 million on our training. $1.5 million for 5 days of training. Man, I share it with everybody. I think God gives me that stuff to share anyway. And so how we take it, well, I had a pointer. There we go. Trying to, I'm going to call it walk the dog, trying to walk it from here to there and get it all the way up into there is just, it's something we haven't mastered in my organizations. We're working on it. I just saw a real good example of how it works because I realized that we were right there. Yesterday's meeting at work, we were right there. Right there. Right, I mean, I said, wait a minute, I got an idea on how we're gonna make the next meeting more effective, more efficient, and make it shorter. And so there are some things we can do to get it up there quicker. But it takes a lot of work down here so that the boss, the executive team, the pastor, and everyone else, when we present it, they get a common operating picture, don't have to ask a lot of questions because we're laying it out for them, and then we can get the proper decisions that we need them to make. But as long as we're down here, and we don't want to make decisions off this. How many of you in your households have made decisions off of that? And when you do, have you ever bought a car? And a month later you're thinking, why did I get this car? Maybe I'm the only one, but through the years, you were excited, you buy this car, you had that new car fever, you drive off the lot, you're happy, then the notes start hitting, and you're thinking, why did I buy this car? Quite often, we did it based on data. We looked at what was coming in. What was coming in? Hey, you know what? I got $300 for a car now. I can do it every month. And we didn't project out. We didn't analyze. And then 3 months later, we're thinking, what in the world? Can I take it back? Can I take it back? It was a great idea that day. But can I take it back? Would it mess up my credit if I take it back? So, anyway, next question. Yes, ma'am.
That information right there to be expounded on in a different way, because that's not just something the execs could use. That's something the rest of us could really use in making decisions within our areas even. Yeah. But it looks like just looking at it, it looks like great information, but applying it and using it just off what you've said, maybe some people can do it with just that. But it just seems like a very important piece of information.
Yeah, and I agree with you. Maybe some point in the future we'll do a little session just on that. Just on that. I want to give you the concept. Actually, I hadn't planned on pulling it up. What made me? The Holy Ghost. I'm sure he did. He's speaking through us. And but we'll probably at some point do something with that. We'll do something with that. Yes, sir.
Can I make a comment instead of a question? I was just one of the goals in leadership is to develop people, right?
That's right.
And I was just seeing the enormity of it because you can develop a Jamal. He can start off as not a Jamal. But if we don't do the training, the not listening, the motivational and all that, he can become a Jamal.
That's right. That was a slide. Corey, if you'll pull up the slide deck And Joe, you are absolutely on it. Let me find the slide. The one that's titled Common Leadership Issues. Common Leadership Issues. Like number 5, somewhere in there. Well, maybe 7 or 8. Just go to the next slide. Yeah, just start going down. Just start going down.
It's
next slide.
8.
Yeah, come on. Right there. That's it. See that first bullet? Sometimes we just allow people to happen. We can develop a Jamal. If we don't do the coaching and the mentoring and the training and the teaching and clarifying expectations and having consequences, good and bad, for their actions, we can. And if you think about it, think back over your careers. You've known people, when they came to work, initially, they were great employees. And then through the years, when they say burnt out and frustrated and all of that, we just allowed that to happen. I see it all the time. People who came in full of fire, and then you look at them some years later. You know, pastor talk about on the front row, and then later on they're in the middle row, and then in the back row, and then they're just not even engaged. And so we see that in organizations a bit. And quite often, no one sits down with them and tries to do a course correction. And then when people talk about it, they'll say, oh, that's just Jamal. He always been like that. Well, really? You trying to tell me Jamal the first day he came to work was like that? No, he wasn't. Something has happened through the years, and now we've allowed Jamal to just happen, and Jamal is here, and now we've got to deal with it. And so you're absolutely right, Joe. If we don't do what we're supposed to do, there are some people, when we talk about the bell curve, those high-end performers, the reflective, and those that are challenging, there are some people who are going to come to work and just do their job regardless of what is going on around them. They come to work every day, and they're going to do their job. Then there's others, if we don't properly guide and mentor and coach, and I think we mentioned it in one of the other slides, start to drift downward. And so good leadership is so, so very important. Yes, ma'am.
First of all, I just wanted to say that the information that you shared has been excellent, and I just wanted to say thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
And then next, I wanted to ask a question about the sidetracks. I know you didn't have the opportunity to kind of go into it, but I was wondering if you could high level tell us how you handle them.
Oh, that's good. The sidetracks are things that people sometimes will pull when you try to have that tough conversation. You know, and they try to take it and take it to a side road. And quite often, they're not planned. It's just a part of who the person is. You ever seen a person that everything's their fault? You know, they just, you know, I just can't seem to get it right. So you go to talk about, you know, I really need you to improve in this area. And then they go into, you know what, I know, because I just can't seem to do right. All my life I've been doing wrong. And I just don't, you know, and you're sitting there like, how do you deal with that? I mean, you know, you don't want to agree with them. Yeah, you're right, man. All your life you've been doing wrong. And so, and they take you down this road, and you're just, you come out of there, and you know you haven't done what you were supposed to do. You know, you went in with good intentions, but when you come out, you're thinking, I never did tell him what I needed him to do, because, yeah, you're right. I don't know why y'all still let me work here, because I don't ever do what I'm supposed to. You've got to have a plan on what you want to communicate and the intent of why you want to have that tough conversation, why you want to challenge that performance. And so sometimes what has helped is there may be 3 bullet points that I want to get out, that I want to get to this person in this communication. And so no matter what they're trying to do, I want to get it back to those 3 points. And sometimes you go all the way around the world. Sometimes you let them expound a little bit. But at the end of that little 30-minute session, whatever it is, I want to get these 3 points in there and get some agreement. When I was using an example with Cheryl Anita, I want to get it back to, but the, understand that you've had a very challenging life, but what we want to do here is make sure we set you up to succeed. And one of the things for you to succeed is you've got to have the report turned in Friday morning. Mm-hmm. Friday morning. I need you to understand that. So what can we do to make sure you get the report in Friday morning? Well, you know, I was born by the river. No, I understand that. I understand that. In a little tent, but I need that report Friday morning, you know. And while you're in the tent, get this report done. And so I want to keep that on point and get some agreement. We talk about performance improvement plans and all that. And it may come to that, but really I should try to engage and get this done verbally first before I start having to put things on paper. That's a leader's responsibility. So maybe I now have to say, I tell you what, let's shoot for you having me to report on Thursday evening. And if you can't get it to me on Thursday evening, then Friday morning is the latest. But I want you to call me on Thursday evening if you can't get it done. But you don't understand. I was born. I do understand that. And so I want to help you to succeed now. So can we agree to get that done? And so whether they're stalling, whatever the case might be, that leader has got to make sure that conversation get back to the performance issue. It's not personal. And sometimes we as leaders take things personal. And that's why we don't really challenge poor performance often. Because it's personal to us and we don't want to lose. We don't want to lose. So it's better just ignore it. And then through the years, Jamal has gotten ignored. Where now Jamal is just a, what's the little cartoon, Tasmanian devil running around just destroying stuff? Because everybody ignored it, because it's simpler to just leave him alone. Just, man, I ain't finna mess with that. It takes work. It takes work to separate employees. It takes work. A lot of documentation to do it right. So we'll let these two be the last, because if I run you late, Mr. Melinda gonna beat me up.
I just want to piggyback on the sidetrack. What if you've got the, you know how we get hit even with through vision partners and in situations in the church, not just, I guess, employees, but vision partners. But we're the most loving church in all the world. You say you're the most, I mean, you're trying to deal with something, and maybe they got personal issues or personal situations going on, and you're trying to accomplish, you know, things still have to get done. And so the manager or the ministry leader gets hit with, what I thought our core value was, we value people. You know how you get hit with
mm-hmm,
that?
Mm-hmm.
How do you balance that? Because you do value people.
Yes.
And you are the most loving church in all the world, but you got to balance it.
You are absolutely right. And we've all heard the core values thrown back at us. Sometimes rightfully so, sometimes not rightfully so. And the balance piece on that, that's why we've got to make sure it's not personal. That's why we've got to make sure we don't invest personally, because then we start, you feel that like anger rising up? You ain't never felt it. I have. You feel that little thing in here, you don't know what it is, but you feel it in there while you're talking. You feel it rising. It's embering. Now it's starting to smolder and it starts blazing, and then you end up, you know. And so I'm the only one that ever felt that, but you trying to represent the core values and you feel it. Don't nobody else know it's burning, but it's burning in there. And you're trying to smile and you're trying to do handle your business, but you feel that fire raging. And so if we can keep it objective, that's why we're only going to talk performance. That's why we're only going to say, I noticed you was late turning in the report, or I noticed I did not receive your status report. And even if they try to take it personal, well, I thought we were the most loving church in all the world. We really are, and that's why we need your status report. So that we can provide good ministry services to all our people that we love. I've been there. I got to answer for all that stuff. They can try that all day long. I got to answer for all of it. I got to answer for all of it. Yes, we do. We really love our people, so I need to know their status. I need to know their status. I love them. See, if I don't know what's going on with them, I can't love them like I need to. I got to know their status. So keep it professional and keep it objective and keep it performance-based. If you do that, you're going to be good to go. Because no matter how they try to take you down those side roads, they'll be going by themselves because you won't be going with them. We're going to last question.
My question is around balancing some of the things you talked about, the applause, the appreciation, and the access. You know, some people require more than others. And so while you're encouraging, providing applause and all that, you don't want to appear to favor one or some more than others. And then you don't want to feed something that shouldn't exist, if that makes any sense.
It does, because the leader, I was sharing with my staff yesterday, the microphone is always on, and as a leader, you're in the fishbowl. And so there are people who watch who you talk to the most, if you're the leader. They do. That must be his favorite right there. She's always in his office. And it really has nothing to do with being the favorite, but as the leader, you may need to give more explicit guidance to this person because of the complexity of the problem and the project and all that. And so it's tough to, people are going to think what they want to think, but I think as long as we keep it, when I say keep it professional, I mean there's going to be some personal moments. There's going to be fun. There should be. We should enjoy what we're doing. But as long as we don't take it personal in a negative way, and as long as we're communicating that my boss over the last week or two, he would say, is there anything you need from me to do your job? And he would look each of us in the eye, is there anything you need? Is there anything you need? And so regardless of which of us he spent the most time with, the fact is I knew when I needed to call him or when I needed something from him, I could get it. And I did call him one night about a situation. And so I think if we take our team members and they understand, if you need anything from me, you got access to me. Call me, email me, set up a meeting, whatever the case is. So now when that employee sees Cheryl Nita in my office the most, they should remember that I gave them access. If you need anything from me, come see me. And if they choose not to, that's on them. But we need to make sure they have access, that they feel comfortable approaching us. Because sometimes there's problems lying underneath that we don't know about because nobody felt comfortable telling the leader. And stuff pops up years later. It's like, where did that come from? Well, and so I could talk more about that, having trusted agents and all that, but we're going to end right here. Corey, I need you to show the video about airplanes. Some of you have heard me say that what we're trying to do here at Faith Chapel is rebuild an airplane while it's in flight. We don't have time to park it because there are people, there are vision partners, there are congregants on the plane, and they're counting on us. And so we got volume on that too. So you're the workers.
Some people like to climb mountains. I like to build planes in the air.
I grew up wanting to be on a plane, wanting to be up this high.
Sometimes the temperature up at altitude will reach 60 below. It's brisk, it's refreshing.
You never know what you're going to come across up here. Canadian geese, mallards,
owls.
These people back here, that's why I come to work. That's why I build airplanes in the sky.
We're not just building a plane here. We're building a dream.
I love this job.
I get a lot of thanks up here. When I look over there and I see that little kid, the look in his eyes, that's all the thanks I need.
Thank you. That is what we're doing. We're rebuilding an airplane while it's in flight. So when Pastor talks about change, we're rebuilding and changing the airplane because we don't have time to land it. Because there are people counting on us. And we've got to get all of these people on the plane to their God-given destination. And God has trusted us to do that. So while you're hanging on the wheels, on the wings, trying to drill it, and it looks like nobody understands you, God is watching, and there are people on the plane who don't even realize what you're doing. Because they're sitting in their seats, they're reading, they're comfortable. All they know is the plane is moving. But you're the ones who are all over the plane, rebuilding it as God gives pastor direction, because we don't have time to park it. So you could park the plane, and you could really then rebuild it quicker. But when you park it, nobody's being ministered to. So we got to keep the plane flying and rebuild it while it's in flight. Thank you. Enjoyed hanging out with you.
Minister AC, that was really good. Before you go, I know you, and I know you like public applause. No, I'm just teasing. Just a little humor. But I did want to just publicly acknowledge you, and thank you so much for coming. And I want to share with you your leadership. I really appreciate your leadership, and you asked us to build the coach last week. And I was thinking of, well, the time you were here before, and I was thinking about you. And it's four things that I think you really, really exemplify excellent leadership. And the first thing is you are very humble. You are just a very humble person. I have had the privilege to work with you, under you, and see you even before you became the COO of Faith Chapel. I remember when we were on this campus and you were walking down by the Helps office and somebody dropped something on the floor and you picked it up. Somebody grabbed to pick it up and you picked it up and you said, the person said, I'll get that. And you said, no, I'll get it. I'm just a servant. I'll get it. And I never forgot that statement because I always thought you were just somebody big. And to just pick up a piece of paper off the floor, Amen. You're just very, very humble. You are so coachable. And I realized that about you when I was serving under you. I mean, it is just amazing how you're the chief of police and very high in the Army and have led tons of training. But when I was serving you, you wouldn't tell me what to do. You made me. And you were training. I'm thinking, how can I go in here and suggest training to you? And I would always say, well, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? And you would say, well, what do you think about it? And really, you just made me feel like I was so equipped to do my Amen. Job. And I just really appreciate that. And to me, that's just coachability. Oh, and so I really appreciate that. You helped me to learn how to prioritize. You have all these different things going on, but you are a husband first. And you have all the, when you were serving here, and then the police chief and all the other things that were going on, you knew how to prioritize and you put the first things first. And that really helped me. And the last thing I wanted to say is that when I was serving under you, I was not in a really not so good situation in the beginning when mm-hmm. I came back. I wasn't in a so good situation. It was a lot of conflict going on, and you helped me to navigate and weave through the conflict by laughing. You would laugh at it, and when he says people might try to sidetrack, oh, he was really good at reeling it back in, man. And I learned because somebody said, well, blah, 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 blah. They were really giving a hardship story. And they were giving a hardship story. I'll never forget this. They were giving a hardship story. And you let them give the hardship story. And then you said, well, what do you think you need to do about it? And they said, well, I don't know. And you said, well, what would you do if somebody else was doing that? And so they said, well, I would remove them. And he said, well, you answered your question.
I always have an answer for
he
that.
He answered the question, and the person just kind of looked, and that was the right thing to do. And since that has happened, that person has said that was the right thing to do. So I just think you are such a humble guy, so coachable. such a servant can prioritize, and you really know how to manage conflict well. So
thank
I just want to publicly say we appreciate
you,
so very, 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 very much. And let's give him a real hand of applause.
All. Thank you.
You did
awesome. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank y'all.
And
God bless you. God
bless you. It's about 5 after 12, so if you like, you may leave.